All right, hey, big game this weekend, so no one better to have back on the show than the professor, Michael Katz, covers Ole Miss, of course, for the DJ Journal. Michael, it's been too long. How are you, man?
I know, man. It's been a while. How are you doing? Last time I saw you, you were big-timing me at the College Football Hall of Fame.
Well, you know, once you get on Netflix, you just don't have time for some people. You know what?
I get it. Actually, I don't get it. Couldn't be me.
Well, I'll tell you something I didn't get, Michael. Maybe you can help explain it to us. What in the hell happened to Ole Miss last week against Washington State? I mean, that game was a nail-biter, despite it being a 33.5-point spread. What happened?
That was a weird one. You know, if we're being honest, that just looked like a really uninspired effort by Ole Miss. And I kind of get it. You know, obviously you've got this really big stretch coming up, starts this weekend at Georgia, and then you've got at Oklahoma the next week. I mean, I think those are the two games that are going to kind of define whether the season, you know, ends in a playoff berth or not. You know, they got the LSU one out of the way, and then there are these two that I think are looming large. You know, also, Ole Miss hasn't necessarily been great out of byes under Lane. You know, a lot of that is because they were playing Alabama after bye weeks for a bit, and so they would lose those games. But, you know, last year, I think their first bye, they beat Oklahoma, and it was kind of an ugly game. And then after the second bye, after they beat Georgia, they went to the swamp and lost. So, you know, they've had these sorts of moments, but it was not what we expected. You know, with how well this team had played against Tulane and LSU and all those things, I think we all just sort of expected that at some point Ole Miss was going to put its foot on the gas and this thing was just going to be a wrap. But it never happened. I was on the field for the last drive for Washington State, and I never really felt like Ole Miss was going to lose that game. But there were a couple moments, like the late pass interference, that gave them like one more play. I was like, are we doing the Kentucky thing again? Like, oh boy, I've seen this one before. So it never felt like they were going to lose it, but man, it never felt like they had it as handily as they should have.
Yeah, and it was just, I mean, it was weird because it's not like Washington State, you know, I'll give them credit. I think they fought a lot harder that day, but they are not, it's like nothing they did. I was like, wow, they're really good. It was like, how's this happening?
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is like they came in averaging like 78 yards rushing a game. And then you've got their running back breaking off a 46-yard run with, you know, safeties out of position, and they run for like 128 yards. It was pretty wild to see all those things that you would have assumed that Ole Miss kind of took care of during the bye week seemed to rear their heads at a bad time.
Well, one thing I did learn about Washington State, I know you're from that region, so maybe, or at least that coast, so maybe you were well aware, but I wasn't. Washington State travels well, and that was impressive. And what was not to Lane Kiffin was the student section and probably just the overall crowd.
You alluded to it in the opening statement, finding a better way to approach these 11 a.m. kicks. Could you sense, I mean, how did you feel the energy was pregame with the team?
I don't know. You know, we're a morning practice format team that should equate to playing well in the morning. Used to. But didn't feel like that. I thought our red zone offense showed up about like our student section did today. Very similar.
So, you know, how does he keep getting away with this stuff? Is it because no one really cares in Oxford as long as they're winning?
I it was funny. I looked at the student section with like right at kickoff, and I turned to people in the press box. I was like, is he going to say something or not? And then they were like, oh, he's going to say something. It's just how thinly veiled will it be? And then like, you know, we made it like a little bit through the press conference, and then he compared the red zone offense to the student section. I was like, there it is. He's back. I think those 11:45 start is kind of a tough ask against a team that I don't think anyone was expecting this to be a 3-point game, right? I think everyone was expecting this to be, a 3-touchdown game at halftime. I think he's probably frustrated because this is a top 10 team that is undefeated and has had a really good run these last few years, particularly in Oxford. So I kind of get it. But yeah, I mean, listen, as long as they're winning, people get mad at the jabs and take it personally, but there's also, it's just like, Lane's going to do what he's going to do, and as long as he's winning games, you're going to take it. That being said, the Washington State contingent was incredible. When I was on the field, I looked up in the corner because, you know, it's kind of hard to tell from the press box because everyone's wearing red. It's just like, what shade? But I looked in that corner and, like, man, there were a ton of people wearing crimson. It was really cool. You know, Washington State's had a really kind of brutal couple of years with the realignment and kind of getting left out of things. But that was really, really cool to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just know Lane is getting inundated with Florida fans and Penn State fans saying, hey, we'll show up for a noon game. But I'm just throwing that out there. But hey, you wrote about old Mr. Trinidad Chambliss over at the DJ Journal. Go check it out. I've retweeted it. Really great stuff from you, Michael. This guy really literally is perhaps the biggest story in college football this year because he came out of nowhere. What was your mindset going in, and what did you learn about Trinidad after you wrote that piece?
So going into that story, I had talked to his head coach at Ferris State, which is where he came from, the Division II school, one of the powerhouses down there. I like equate them to like what North Dakota State is at the FCS level, just kicking everyone's ass for the most part. And so like I sort of knew the underdog part of it and how he got to Ole Miss, but I went home for the bye week to California and I was talking to my mom and she was just like, Trinidad's a really interesting name. I wonder where it comes from. And I was like, well, it's probably not because they're fans of the Caribbean islands. There's got to be something else there. And so I kind of thought, I was like, I kind of want to know like more about where he comes from, his family. So I got hold of his parents and had a really great talk with them. And I talked to his high school coach. And I think the coolest thing about his story is, especially now in this era of college football where it's like all business, it kind of seems like a little bit of the joy that we kind of loved about college football kind of gets lost these days. And Trinidad's just a kid who just like, even when he was growing up, he was doing footwork drills before he would go to bed. His parents would hit him with pool noodles as he like went through progressions. He would play catch in the front yard with his dad, and like all the neighborhood kids would come and start playing too. Like there's just like a genuine joy that he gets from football. And if you've ever seen him, he's always smiling. I've only seen him not smile once. And it was in the post game press conference after Washington State, when I think they all got reamed by Lane. And no one was happy after that one. But other than that, I mean, this is just a guy who genuinely loves it. And I think that's just, it's kind of refreshing right now because, again, we get caught up in all the NIL and the business side of things. And it's just what a story about a guy who love of the game got his opportunity when no one thought he was going to get the opportunity at Ole Miss. I mean, this was Austin Simmons' show. I mean, they brought him to media days. He is a project. He had odds on the Heisman board before the season started. There was no way that this was going to happen. And then it does, and Trinidad comes in and he seizes the opportunity. And it's a really cool story about someone doing it for the right reasons, and a guy who, you know, had his moment and didn't let it pass him by.
Yeah, no, that was one of the things that I really wanted to ask you about, because it is so unique. That do you have any information on the recruiting pitch or anything like that? Because like you just laid out, you know, we got to remember, I mean, Ole Miss fans, I've talked to people in and around that building as well, all in on Austin Simmons. And I'm not saying they're out on him, but just the level of what they thought he could be, to get this other quarterback to come in and be like, okay, just so you know, we've got maybe a superstar. You know, you're likely not going to be in the Heisman contention midway through the season. How do you get a guy like that to come to Oxford? What was it that made him, even in the face of an extremely talented quarterback in front of him on the depth chart, what made him come to Oxford?
That's pretty crazy. I mean, I even remember last year when Jackson, who was a first-round pick, people were like, man, wait till you see the next guy. Like, people were having that conversation last year when Jackson led the nation in, like, passing efficiency and yards per game and has obviously been playing really, really well for the Giants. I think Trinidad is one of those guys who's always sort of bet on himself. He wasn't highly recruited. He was small. He was recruited during COVID. He wasn't on the camp circuit. So he's always kind of flown under the radar and had to fight for it. At Ferris State, he was the backup for 3 years before he got his chance to lead them. He's a guy who just sort of sticks things through and bets on himself and has that confidence. And from what his parents told me, when they got to Oxford, the research that Lane and Charlie Weiss Jr. and Joe Judge, the quarterback's coach, had done was just so impressive to them. They had a plan. They knew what he did. This wasn't just a, hey, we saw some of your clips on Twitter and we think we love to get you here. This was a guy that they had a plan for. And I think it was big too, because he's really close with his family. He's from Grand Rapids, which is not around the corner from Oxford. Ferris State was about an hour away. This is about 11 hours away. And I think that when they understood, like when the coaching staff seemed genuine and really like actually knew what they were doing with Trinidad, I think that was really comforting for his parents. When you're sending your kid away, it's hard, 11 hours. And so I remember his mom said she kind of had a peace when she felt that room and the energy. And they didn't make another visit after they came to Ole Miss. It was just, hey, Trinidad was like, this is the place I want to be. It reminds me of Ferris State with the family atmosphere and the coaching. And then his parents were just like, dude, like, let's do it. And so, yeah, it is. But I mean, it is kind of wild to think, like, under most circumstances, who would have imagined that this guy would actually be playing in meaningful games?
Yeah, I mean,
he got here in like June. I mean, it's crazy the way this thing has blown up.
Right. I mean, literally the only thing I heard was that I think in fall camp it must have been where they said, hey, we think this guy can, if we need him in a pinch or whatever, we think he can help. That was the extent to anything I heard about him. So it's wild. And it's also wild. I really wanted to ask you this. You referenced it in your story, but just being down there in Oxford, how many flags, Trinidad flags, are we seeing? Because, no offense to Ole Miss fans or literally any SEC fans. I mean, I couldn't tell you what a Trinidad flag looked like either, but I can only imagine how many of those we got all over Oxford now.
Yeah, as a lifelong fan of Trinidad Tobago myself, it's funny because his first start was Arkansas. Like right after that, people started getting flags. And for my story, I literally I just went to the square downtown Oxford and I just walked around the entire thing looking for every place that had a Trinidad flag because I want to talk to the owner about it. I was just driving around the other day. People in front of their homes had Trinidad flags. There's people got pins. There's Trinidad for Heisman stuff with the flag. I remember a few weeks ago, someone posted the Google Trends of flags being ordered. And it's just a straight line up. And can you imagine being the Amazon shipping facility in Memphis? And you're like, what the hell are all these Trinidad flags going to Oxford for? That's insane. But it's really cool. I think that's one of the great things about college football is fans find these people they just sort of grasp onto and they can't help but root for them. But yeah, no, it's I did not know a ton about the flag. I had to do a bunch of research to figure out proper terminology for is it Trinidad? Is it Trinidad Tobago? Is it Trinidad and Tobago? Countries, islands, how are we going to term this? Because I don't want to piss anybody off. I mean, we got to be accuracy is the most important thing, right? First thing I asked his parents was where does his name come from? And his mom was like, I thought maybe you guys are just really big fans of the Caribbean. And his mom was like, no, we've never been there, but we've heard it's nice. It's like, okay, so I'm glad you guys understand how insane this flag stuff is, but it's really cool. Trinidad loves the memes. He is a huge fan. Every week I ask him, have you seen any of the new memes? And he's all in on them. So someone gave him a pin after the game, the Trinidad flag pin. It really is like it's in this, again, in the world of college football where things are so business oriented. It's just such a fun story.
Right. And it's only going to ramp up this week, Michael, with College Game Day in Athens. Ole Miss, of course, undefeated, going to Georgia. This is an opportunity that if Ole Miss can win this game, you know, he may very well be the favorite to win the Heisman. I think it could be that much. What's your thoughts on this, like, keys to the game for Ole Miss playing at Georgia?
So I think back to the 2023 game, right? The disaster, the 52-17, which actually was a game that was back and forth for a bit. It was like 14-14, and then Georgia just like ran for 300 yards, and it all kind of fell apart from there. I could be totally wrong, and I know things change on a game-to-game basis. This doesn't strike me as one of those kind of games. I'm not sure what Ole Miss is going to look like in this sort of road environment. I mean, they played one road game. It was at Kentucky, and it was close. Obviously, different quarterback then, and a different team. You know, just they've played a lot more games since then. It's going to be a little bit different playing in front of 95,000 at Stanford, and you know, with fans that are actively barking or booing at you. You know, that's a little different than you know, Trinidad's only started at home so far, so. I think that is going to be different, but, you know, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before, you know, we got on here. Like, this is obviously a really good Georgia team, but I don't know if it's one of the best Georgia teams that Kirby's had, right? He's had so many, like, superstar teams. There are some question marks with this Georgia team. They don't get after the passer particularly well. Their sack numbers are really low, which is weird. I know they've got some secondary injuries right now. I mean, this doesn't strike me as one of those games where Ole Miss probably gets blown out. I think it's going to be close. I think the biggest thing is the last time Ole Miss was there, they got bullied. They can't get bullied because if Georgia runs for 300 yards again, this thing's going to be ugly. Ole Miss needs to be the one running the ball. I mean, they've got a running back this year. If they had Kewon Lacy last year, they'd probably go undefeated. Because they couldn't run the ball at the end of games last year, and that's why they lost. They're able to run the ball late when they need to for the most part. You know, the defense is a little up and down. The run defense, again, is a little alarming, and Georgia knows how to run the ball. They don't have one guy who's got a ton of yards, but they have a lot of guys who have a lot of yards. And Gunnar Stockton's a mobile quarterback, which makes things tough. But I think that the weaknesses and strengths of both teams are kind of aligned. I think it's, I know I would Georgia's favored by what, 6.5, 7.5, whatever it is now. I think this is going to be a really, really close game where, you know, with the way that Ole Miss has won close games this year, you know, they didn't win a single one score game last year. And part of that is because they were winning games by a lot. But you know, listen, they lost 3 games by 13 points last year. They did not win a single one of those situations. They've won what, 4 of them now? This year, against teams, and yeah, you could say, well, they should be beating them by more, I think there's something to be said for winning close games, and I think it's going to be fascinating. I really am curious to see, you know, with the effort they had last week, right? There's a part of me that's like, were they not showing everything? Were they saving something? Not putting everything on film? Or, you know, maybe if that was their best, like, how, you got to think this week of practice was among the most intense they've had. So I think they're going to get the best. This is going to probably be the best version of Ole Miss. And, you know, we know Georgia's going to be ready. It's a really interesting game. I don't know if I'm ready to actually make a pick yet. I'm like, I'm a field goal either way right now.
Yeah. And then, do you like the odds if Ole Miss wins? So anywhere in the stadium, on the field, or in the press game, post-game press conference, that Lane Kiffin will start clapping like this. Will that happen this week, do you think?
Well, between that and, wait, did you hear his comment about who burns more energy during games? He's like, well, I just saw Kirby. It doesn't look like he's burning much. I was like, man.
Off-the-wall question, you and Kirby, two most, probably some of the more demonstrative coaches on the field. Who do you think burns more calories in a game you were in?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I walked by the TV and saw his press conference today, so it looked like he's burned too many calories.
That's cold. Like, I know they're boys, which is really, really funny, because they're so different.
Right.
But yeah, oh yeah, no, I could totally see Lane, or like near the end of the game, him clapping like this or something. You know, listen, if there's an opportunity to troll, you know he's going to do it. That's what he does. He's the king.
All right, last thing for you, Michael. Really appreciate your time. I know, hey, we're undefeated. You know, the playoffs are looking likely. But I don't want to be negative here, but would it be an even bigger disappointment this season if Ole Miss doesn't make the playoff than last season? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, maybe now because they're 6-0. But if you had said before the season that on October 16th, Ole Miss would be the number 5 team in the country, I think every fan would have signed up for it and said, what a coaching job. What an amazing season during a rebuilding year. You know, last year was the team that was supposed to do this. Last year's team was incredible. I mean, top 5 scoring offense, defense, first round picks. But they didn't get it done. So, I think last year is going to stick with people just because of, you know, you had the first round quarterback, you had Walter Nolan, you had Princely Amonbiela, and you Trey Amos, Trey Harris. I mean, just all of these guys who are making impacts in the NFL right now. I think that's always, you know, for a while, it's going to be the season that kind of got the one that got away. You know, obviously at this point, I think now the expectations have raised for this team in terms of, well, we're 6-0, like, you know, we're almost there, right? But I think that, you know, obviously not making the playoffs this year would be tough because it would mean something went wrong the last half of the season. But that being said, I don't think there's any way that if they, you know, keep winning in a way that they are right now, I mean, this is one of the best coaching jobs Lane's done.
No, absolutely. To your point, I thought this was an 8-4 team.
I did too.
You know, so yeah, he's doing a masterful job. All right, Michael, we really appreciate you. I'm going to put a link to your story in the show notes so everybody could go check it out. Besides that, though, can you tell the audience how to follow you and how to find your work?
Yeah, if you want some bad memes, I'm a king. I'm very good at those. You can find me on Twitter at Michael L. Katz, and you can find my work at djournal.com, and I tweet some of it out too, depending how happy I am with it. So yeah, if you're willing to see some bad memes and some occasional news on Ole Miss football, that's where to find me.
Thank you for calling it Twitter. I'm never switching. Oh, yeah,
I know. I can't, man. I'm not calling. I'm not.